This is the Shetler Show.
We have a massive snowstorm about to hit New England. They're saying 20 to 30 inches. Oh my God. But don't worry, you'll have something to listen to. Tonight's guest is the one and only Dale Raymond. He is the man who taught me all about skateboarding. I first met him and he did a kickflip and it blew my mind and I was like, holy shit, we have to be friends. And he instantly asked me to stay over at his house, gave me his extra skateboard, and was so cool to me. He has since become a chef, had a family, knows a lot about cooking, and this episode is all about Dale. So I hope you enjoy, man. He's one of my favorite people. I'm excited to share this with you. Also, I just want to say thank you. Since I started doing these podcasts with Skype, I've added this intro before each show, and you guys have shown me so much love, and people have been supporting the podcast and All I Need Skateboards by buying stuff on our online store at allineedskate.com, and it's been awesome, and it means a lot to me. It really helps pay the bills, man. With podcasts come bills, and you guys are helping support the podcast and keep these conversations going, so I'm going to keep them going. I'm stoked to be doing this, and I got tons of professional skateboarders and interesting people and all types of stuff coming your way. So thank you again. I love you guys so much. Enjoy the show.
Hang on, brothers and sisters. Liberation is near. It's almost time.
Hell yeah, say come on. To all my people, where you at? Put your fist up. We gon' twist up. Say come on, come on. Experience the train of thought. Hop aboard. Come on. Experience rocking with the reflection.
All right, we're live. What's up, Dale?
Not much, man. How you doing?
Chilling, man. How's your day going?
Good, good. Nice lazy day today. Getting ready for this big snowstorm.
Yeah, give me the rundown. What'd you do? Wait, you woke up?
Yeah, woke up. Hung out with the kids. It's pretty lazy, man. I didn't really do too much.
Oh, well, that's awesome. A nice little break.
Yeah, it was nice.
What are they saying about this storm, man? I don't have cable, so I don't have a fucking clue.
So I guess we're supposed to get, they're saying Seacoast, New Hampshire, where we are, like up to 24 inches, so 2 feet of snow.
Damn. Fuck me, right?
Yeah, they've already declared a state of emergency for New Hampshire and Mass, so.
Yeah, my work just told me today when I was leaving, they're like, yeah, you're not going to come in tomorrow.
Yeah, I got the same thing, man. My boss called me earlier. He's like, take a snow day tomorrow, so it's pretty sick.
Yeah, it's like in school, like elementary school, there's snow day, just time to fucking run around your underwear inside.
Yeah, last year I was working at a country club, man, and we got, you know, it was a private country club, so all it is just the members that you expect, so, you know, we had snow days all the time. You know, I worked in hotels before that we never shut down, so, I'm pretty good with snow days.
Wait, so you work now, so where you work now is a country club, you're saying?
No, not now. Now I work at a restaurant in Rochester, New Hampshire, but my last job was at a private members-only country club.
Cool. For those listening, or for those that will be listening, me and Dale have known each other forever. How long has it been?
Damn, I think we met when I was like 15 and you were 14 or some shit like that.
Holy schmoly, I'm 32 now, so you do the math.
Yeah, about to be 34, so it's been a long time.
Yeah, man, we've been friends forever, and actually Dale was the first person that introduced me to skateboarding. I didn't even know anything about skateboarding, and I just saw this dude, and he had a skateboard, and I think you did a kickflip. Maybe a kickflip?
Yeah, I think it was a kickflip, and you still got the picture in the newspaper, though.
You won't let it go, dude. You got 4-on-1.
I can't get over it, man. It still hurts me to this day.
You got into 4-on-1 before all of us, so I don't even know why you're stressing.
Yeah.
Was it frontside flip?
I think it was like the Raymond Times or something. That's pretty big.
Yeah, Raymond New Hampshire Times. That really fucking broke out. Hollywood lifestyle right there. What was your trick in
4-on-1? You had a pretty mob.
Your trick in 4-on-1 was like frontside flip, like roast beef grab?
No, man, it was just a frontside flip at Nashua.
Oh, you didn't grab it?
At that concrete park. No, no grab. No, I let go of the Chet Thomas grab a long time ago. I just stuck with the frontside flips.
You never grab roast beef, right?
No, I don't think so.
Yeah, I was just kidding.
Wasn't Tremblay the roast beef guy?
Yeah, hell yeah. He ran it for sure. I don't know if he ran it seriously, but he just ran it as, like, funny factor.
Yeah.
We're actually coming up your way for a demo. February 7th.
Yeah, man, February 7th.
You think you'll be free?
I'm going to try to. I'm not sure what's going on at work at the moment, but I definitely want to.
It's going to be
It'd be awesome.
It'll be a Saturday, and it'll be going for, you know, a few hours. It doesn't start till 5, so it'll be going.
Right. What are you guys doing afterwards? You just heading back?
Probably. I'm going to have a huge crew, so it might be kind of crazy. I got to kind of figure that out still. I've been kind of working on these webisodes. Did I tell you about this?
No.
So I'm working on this webisode. It's kind of like a reality webisode we're gonna call it AIN Life. All I Need Life.
Okay.
Yeah. Yep. It's basically gonna be the way we're formulating it right now is it's gonna be skateboarding. Well, each episode will have skateboarding in it. Something outside the box. Like the first episode's gonna have the float tank. Sensory deprivation tank. You ever heard of that?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, so we're going to have skateboarding mixed with the float tank, like me doing it and filming it, and then we're going to have No Problemo, like going to get food and interview Paiva and stuff like that.
So, oh, sick.
Yeah, that'll be episode one, and then the next one will have, you know, like we don't know what the next one will have, but it'll be something like pole dancing with my girl or something, and then skateboarding, and then a food spot, you know what I mean? So pretty excited for that.
Right.
I was thinking today, I was like, maybe we could just come up to where you work and get some food, and you could bring out your finest dishes, and we could have it on the show.
Yeah, man. I think kitchens are a good spot for that. You get some kind of crazy personalities going on in there, so definitely be cool. Restaurant life's a little nuts. Probably would attract me to it.
Yeah, do you think if we ended up doing something with your restaurant that they'd let us come film a little bit and be involved with the cameras and stuff? Are they?
Yeah, I'm sure, man. It's marketing, you know, as long as it's done in a positive way, definitely.
Yeah, it would totally be awesome. That's good, because I was thinking that today, and I was like, it'd be rad to just go show you at work, get some footage of you behind the counter doing your thing, and then just, like, bring the meals out, and, like, maybe me and Dom Pierre or Westgate or someone will come up and just eat your grub at your restaurant.
Yeah, man, I'd be down with that, definitely.
Hey, kind of a good segue. How did you get into cooking?
How did I get into cooking?
Like as a profession.
So I never knew anything outside of skateboarding when I was younger. That's all I did it was like 8 hours a day, get out of school and go skate until your legs fall off, you know, 7 days a week.
Yeah, hell yeah.
And, you know, I think growing up, you know, and getting older, the injuries kind of started piling up and the ankle started letting go and it wouldn't really hold together anymore. And, it got to the point where I had to kind of figure out what to do because I think I was like 23 at that point and had no idea what to do with my life.
You were already falling apart at 23, dude.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, my body couldn't hold up, so. But, so I started working in kitchens, you know, just like initially as money just to pay rent so I could just skate as much as possible.
What were you doing in the kitchens? You weren't cooking, right?
No, I think it was like, you know, started off like washing dishes and then like delivering pizzas and then like, you know, later on down the road making sandwiches and, you know, just some simple things like that.
Hell yeah.
And so I kind of stuck with it, you know, once I kind of needed to become an adult.
Yeah.
And, earn some money and stuff like that. And I don't know, man, I just got really curious about it. You know, the more that I did it, like, you know, you're working in a restaurant and you got like, you know, gallons of different vinaigrettes and salad dressings and sauces and, you know, pre-made items like that. And always the curiosity of how these things were made was, you know, it was always at the back of my mind. Like, I know there's something before they end up in the bottle, but what is it? What is going on behind the scenes? And, you know, just it was always those questions and always that the information I was looking for. So I ended up going to culinary school. And then, I don't know, man, just, you know, here I am. I'm, you know, going on 34 and loving it, so.
Where did you go to school?
I went to Le Cordon Bleu when it was in Dover, New Hampshire.
Oh, cool. And Red Alert's down there, right? Dover?
Yep. Yeah. It's right on the other side of town, so Ralph. Ralph, I just heard he bought the place, just not to, you know, leap off subject here, but.
No, dude, the podcast is all about leaping off subject. That's all I do is jump around like crazy. Yeah, he hit me up. He sent me a message. He was like, yo, I fully own this now, and I just want you, the All I Need crew to come through and do, like, a skate jam, and I was like, hell yeah, let's do it. So we're going to rig something up for the future, for sure. Maybe I could kind of time it around Rye. I don't know, it's kind of too close, but maybe next time. We'll figure it out.
Rye's sick, man. I'm glad for him, you know?
Yeah.
He's awesome. He's doing well.
I'm stoked for him, too, man, because he was someone that, growing up, it was like, he's a wild man. You never knew which way he was going to go, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
He could be in the newspaper for killing someone, or he, you know, or he could just be like, you know, in jail, or he could have had, like, a positive outcome, which seems to be the what has happened.
Yeah, I got so many stories about Ralph Tremblay, too, man. Those guys together were, like, a terrible combination, but
yeah,
so funny.
Did Parter having to grow up, like, did that involve your first child?
Absolutely, 100%, yeah.
How old were you then?
I was 24 when my wife got pregnant with Savannah.
Dang.
So yeah, definitely a life changer for me.
What's your mind state right there? But all right, so put me in your shoes at 24, right when you find out, like, what's the scenario? Where are you working? Like, right as you're about to find out, you're.
All right, so I think I was making some pretty terrible money working at a bar, a bar where they do, like, you know, buy one, get one burger night, you know, like some crazy stuff like that. And, you know, cooking chicken wings and stuff like that. And then, I found out Nikki was pregnant and, I don't know. I knew I needed to make some changes because it was kind of a free for all, you know, at that time. It was, you know, I got a girlfriend, but I'm still out, you know, partying and just doing whatever. And, you know, it wasn't settled down at all. And I wasn't, you know, it wasn't anything I was thinking about until, you know, until I got that phone call. And then it was, you know, time to get my act together.
Yeah, I imagine that would really put some hustle in you. And had you graduated from high school? Did you graduate from high school?
No, I actually dropped out and I got my GED later on.
Damn. So how do you go from washing dishes to actually getting behind the counter? Like, I guess kind of explain it for, like, someone, maybe an aspiring person that's washing dishes right now. Like, how'd you go about going from washing dishes about to have this kid to, like, on your way to school? And, like, did you have help with schooling? Did people help you pay for it? Like, how did you manage to make that transition? That's like a solid adult transition, like going from a child to, like, having a kid to going to school to making a career. Like, that's not an easy transition for anyone. So how do you go about that?
I think it's like anything. I mean, you know, you're in the same boat of, you, whatever it is that you're going to do, you have to dive into 100%. You can't, 110%, I should say.
Yeah.
You can't, if you're going to do something, you need to do it all the way. So for me, it was, you know, I knew what I was doing, making the amount of money that I was making, that was going to be as much as I was going to do, unless I pushed myself, not only to educate myself, but also to learn the skills, using my hands, and to get, you know, to get some sort of an education, to be able to take that next step where I can actually make a career and, you know, have a family and support them and you know, do those types of things. So it's like anything in life, man. You have to be fully invested. You know, for me, the workday doesn't end when I leave work. You know, I've got bookcases of books downstairs that I'm constantly reading up on. If I'm seeing new things as far as technique or ingredients or anything like that, I always research it because I want to know exactly what's going into it and just playing with things. And it's that curiosity. I think, you know, if you have it, you need to take advantage of it and keep digging. You know, it's skateboarding is the same way. It's a never ending education. And that's the best part of about it. If you skateboard once a week, I mean, your chances of doing anything with it, you know, long term are probably slim. But if you're invested and you're out there skating on the days where your body hurts and you're bleeding and you're not into it, but you're still out there doing it, that's, you know what I mean? Those are the people that are going to succeed with anything, you know?
Yeah, I feel like we're blessed because we found skateboarding at such a young age. We found this thing that, like, it humbles you and it forces you to have patience and it teaches you about perseverance and it shows you that, like, if you want to do that three flip, like, you have to put the work in. It teaches you about work ethic. It teaches you, like, because you have desire and you want to do these things, but they're not free. Nothing's free. You gotta do the work and the steps, and it involves all these qualities that people, you know, either have or don't have, or they build through that. So I feel like skateboarding, I'm always in awe of skateboarders because they have these qualities, because just from wanting to learn tricks, you know. And a lot of skateboarders are outgoing and personable because, you know, you skate, you meet people, you say hi and talk. At least back when we started, you know what I mean?
Yes.
That's right.
Yeah, no, I know. I mean, I think the ultimate example is, you know, Corey Goonan posted a picture on Instagram the other day of them blowtorching a mini ramp.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's dead of winter. There's snow everywhere, and the thing is soaking wet, and they're out there shoveling and blowtorching a mini ramp to dry it.
A piece of shit mini ramp, too. It's fucking 4 foot
long. Yeah, one of those situate ramps. But those dudes are out there, man. Like, they want to skate, you know? That's the passion, the desire, and that's the go get that shit that you need to have, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like, do you feel like skateboarding helped you as far as qualities to become a chef and where you're at today?
Yeah, definitely. Because it's that, like you said, it's that patience and perseverance. Like, I always tell people, you know, that work for me, one of the biggest things I tell them is it's okay to screw something up because you're going to learn a lesson from it every single time. When you nail something, you get it right, at that point, you're kind of done learning and it's time to move on to the next thing. Skateboarding is like that. It's, you know, you could try something for hours on end and you got to have the patience to stick it through. And each time you screw up, there's a little lesson of trying to figure out exactly where you went wrong. There's a little intricacy that you're going to pick up on. It's the same thing with cooking as far as, you know, the technique and everything that goes into it. There's, you know, how hot is your flame? How low is your flame? There's different temperatures to work with. There's so many things like to take into consideration, but you have to recognize them when things go wrong so that you can correct them. Same thing with skateboarding.
Yeah.
You move your foot a millimeter to the left. You know, is it going to change the way that the board's flipping? It's that same idea. You know, it's very similar in a lot of ways, just not as active physically, but the mental part of it is drastically similar.
Yeah, absolutely. And like skateboarding, I mean, cooking has a lot of flavor, just like skateboarding, a lot of different flavors.
Yeah, it's the never ending education, man. It is.
That's cool. So do you proactively like just try to look for new stuff to cook or new cooking styles? Are you constantly like trying to expand in that way?
Yeah, constantly. Like I was downstairs yesterday watching YouTube videos because I want to do cured meats at the restaurant. So I'm looking how to build a cabinet to hang meats and stuff like that because it's got to be temperature controlled and humidity controlled. So, you know, things like that where I just want to do more. Like I want to do as much as I can.
Wait,
you know?
So you'd like build a cabinet, like a wooden cabinet or something? You just hang meat to like let it dry out or something?
Yeah. We would cure it and then let it hang to age, so it gets a little funk on it.
What's cure it mean? I'm sorry.
So we would take something. Say we would take, you know, a duck breast, and we would cure it in, you know, salt and sugar to keep it simple.
All right.
Which would take moisture out of, you know, out of the piece of meat. And then we would hang it so that we could get some kind of good mold growing on it.
Yeah.
We'll firm up the texture, the moisture will leave it. You know, if you've ever had prosciutto or salamis, things like that, you know.
Oh, okay, yeah. That makes sense. So how do you go from dishwashing I got to get in school? Like, how did that transition happen?
No, when I was even like as a kid, as a, you know, 15 years old, I started washing dishes at a banquet hall just to you know, pay insurance for my car. But it was always like, you know, you'd see the line cooks and that's where all the action was, and you're the lowly dishwasher, and it's always, you know, wanting to get the hell out of that spot and be something, you know?
Yeah.
And those guys seem like they're having so much fun. It's just kind of the, you know, it's kind of the next step to do. And, you know, those steps gradually happen and you try to perfect your craft. And, you know, if you're, hopefully you meet the right people and they give you an opportunity to take those steps in life. And, you know, it's also up to you on your end to you know, keep a good attitude and work hard and keep getting better at what you do, you know, to also move up that ladder. So, but, you know, I've been fortunate. I've worked with some really great people, not only talent-wise, but, you know, people that just showed strong leadership and gave people chances. So
it seemed like, you know, we talk every few months, we have like a good long conversation and just catch up. It seems like that like perseverance learned through skateboarding really paid off because I feel like you worked for a few different places and you really wanted to progress and make it into like another position and get promoted or do things certain ways, and that you know, maybe the places you were working at, their goals didn't line up with your goals. And it seemed like you had to kind of persevere,
yeah.
Huh?
Yeah. I mean, it can get tough. It's a tough industry, you know? Yeah.
Because it seems like a timing thing, you know? It's like, especially if you're coming up from dishwashing and then learning your craft and having skills, and then it seems like you did it like the old-fashioned way, like you kind of just started from ground level and worked your way up there by just like not giving up, you know what I mean?
Yeah. No, I mean, that's what it is. I mean, you have bad days. I still do, you know? Yeah. But you have really good days, too. And, yeah, I mean, it's, I don't know, man. It's a lot. It's just a lot of hard work and paying attention, asking questions. And, I don't, yeah, it is the perseverance of, I guess, you know, you had similar things with your skateboarding career. You end up in certain places, and sometimes it just doesn't feel right, or I don't know, maybe you thought it was something different. I think there's a right place and a wrong place, you know, for everybody to be. I feel like right now I'm in a pretty good spot with what we're doing. I have a lot of freedom to kind of put, you know, what I want to do on the plate. The owners have been very supportive like that. We got a really good staff, so, you know.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, is it seemed like you were very focused, and you knew where you wanted to go, and you worked at some places that, you know, the opportunity might not have been there for you, or you didn't, you know, so you had to just take more chances. You definitely took more chances. Like, I remember you would call me and we'd talk, and you'd be like, oh, you know, like, I'm switching jobs, or I got an opportunity here, and I gotta just, like, leap of faith style, kinda. Especially yeah. when you have kids and a mortgage, you know? So every time we talked, I was always in awe. Like, I'm like, it's so rad that he's just going for it, because most people would stay stuck in that comfortable position, even if it's not comfortable, they'd stay in that position because of money and whatever, you know, the pressures. They wouldn't take that chance that I feel like you did multiple times.
Yeah, I think the biggest leap of faith was leaving the one job and not having anything lined up, you know?
Yeah.
And, I remember I gave my notice because I just was not, it just, I don't know, it wasn't for me. I knew there was something else out there that I was supposed to be doing, and I remember you know, I sat down with the guy and, you know, I gave my notice and then texted my wife like 5 minutes later. And the only thing I said was, I just gave my notice. Am I okay in the head? What am I doing? You know, I wasn't quite sure if I was feeling okay, but you know, it just wasn't there, you know, like, I don't know. The job requires a lot. It's long days. It's long hours. And so part of that is, you know, a big part of that is you got to enjoy what you do. You got to be 100% happy. Otherwise it's really hard to do it for, you know, 12, 13 hours a day.
Yeah,
into kind of, you know, not be there for anything else. So it's tough.
Well, I admire that you keep striving and you keep looking for the right opportunity and you keep learning and growing, and it's awesome. It's cool to see it, man. What's your favorite thing to cook?
My favorite thing to cook? I like slow foods. I like long braises and rustic. I think winter for me is one of the best times of year with, you know, all the root vegetables and the braised meats and the heavy, complex, deep flavors. You know, that's really the stuff that I really enjoy doing, because there's so much to it, and you know, the thyme just develops these super unique flavors that you just can't get anywhere else. So
yeah, that sounds, just you describing that, you didn't even really mention anything, but it all sounded delicious. Just deep flavors and robust.
yeah, man, like, we do at the restaurant at Revolution right now, we're doing like, we do braised short ribs, but we braise them for, you know, 48 hours with, you know, rosemary and red wine. We do pork shanks. Those go for 48 hours also. So, I mean, it's things like that where, you know, 48 hours sitting in, you know, a stock with, you know, herbs and wines and all that good stuff. Some mirepoix, those flavors, you can't imitate those.
Hell yeah. What's some of the bullshit that comes with working behind the counter at a restaurant? Like, what's some troubles, what's some difficulties that you come across, or, like, any crazy stories like that? Like, any fires in the kitchen or customers coming in there, or have you ever had any crazy experiences?
Yeah, we've, I don't know if you're familiar with an Ansel system, but it's like the fire suppressant system in a kitchen.
Okay.
So over each piece of equipment in a kitchen, there's a metal tube. And if a fire goes off, or if you pull the fire alarm, that releases a chemical that sprays everywhere. It's nasty.
Yeah.
It's really nasty. So twice now in my career, I've experienced this Ansel system being set off. Once I was at a place and there was a guy there doing work to the system, and he forgot to lock it out. So he tripped it while he was servicing it. We were, you know, it was like 11 o'clock in the morning. We were getting ready to open up for 11:30. We had all this stuff on the stove, all these sauces and everything. System went off and just flooded the line with the chemical. I got like sprayed in the face with it. You know, it was bad. We couldn't open until like 5 o'clock. They had to have a whole crew come in and spray down all the equipment. We had to throw all the food away. And then the other one, you know, one of the cooks was heating up fat to make soap with and walked away from it. Well, you got a big pot of fat on the stove. The thing caught fire and then set the Ansel system off again. So it was pretty miserable. Not fun.
Yeah, that sounds like a nightmare. It's like you have to sanitize everything. If it's just spraying everywhere, you can poison people.
Yeah, you got to throw away everything in all the coolers. You got to prep all that food again. On top of that, I mean, the mess that it makes, it's hours and hours of cleanup. But, yeah, I mean, other than that, it's just, you know, I don't know. You experience some silly stuff, you know. People complain about some pretty crazy things. One place I was at, we did, like, an all-you-can-eat fish fry, and people would complain about the portion. And you're kind of like, it's all you can eat. You can order as much as you want, you know.
It's like, relax.
Yeah, same thing with, like, a brunch, you know. They're like, oh, the muffins are too small. Well, you can take two. They're, you know, it's brunch.
Yeah.
It's a buffet. You can grab whatever you want. So things like that make you scratch your head, you know.
I wanted to talk a little bit about you were telling me a little bit. Was it fusion cooking?
Oh no, I think it was sous vide is what we were talking about.
Sous vide.
When I was at your house.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I kind of want to talk about that again. Remind me what that was exactly.
All right. So sous vide was it's cooking in a water bath. So like I was saying about the short ribs. So what you do is you need two things. You need a sealer, preferably a chamber sealer,
yeah.
And then you need an immersion circulator. So what the immersion circulator does is it's a heating unit that is you can submerse it underwater. So you would hook it onto, say, like a 5-gallon bucket, for example, and you would fill that bucket with water, and then you would turn this unit on, which dips into the water, and you can set it for whatever temperature that you want, you know, usually somewhere between 140 to 165 degrees, I mean, depending on what you're doing. What you would do is you would seal bags, you would cryovac bags of food, and then you would cook them in this water bath, because you can cook at such a low temperature, and it's controlled, so you can cook for longer. So our short ribs, we do ours for 150 degrees, but we do it for 48 hours. So we're still above that danger zone of, you know, the temperature where bad things happen.
Yeah.
But we can control the temperature almost perfectly to the degree, so that we can just let it go for days at a time. And it's the thing is, when they're in those bags, you're not losing any of the flavors. You're not losing any moisture. So all that flavor is just being purified, while it cooks in there. So it's really cool, because you can take temperatures, you know, something like chicken breast, you got to cook at 165 degrees to kill any, you know, salmonella or anything. But you can slow cook it if you expose it to, say, 155 degrees, and you're cooking it for 6 hours, you're still killing that bacteria, because instead of hitting the high temp, you're just stretching out the time. You can play with those variables, you know?
It must come out so tender and so full of flavor. Like,
yeah, it's unbelievable. And it's got just a little bit of pink to it, too, so it's not... It's still got that. It's got a lot more flavor than what you would get from a typical, you know, say even a 3-hour braise, because you're going so high. But yeah, the flavors are so much different, as well as the textures too. The food is phenomenal.
What's one thing that you've cooked that you didn't think you could do that you pulled off?
One thing that I cooked that I didn't think I could pull off.
Or like, yeah, is there anything that you like you dreamt you could do that you've actually come through and cooked or learned about? Or
I don't know, man. I don't know. I don't really approach anything like it's impossible. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I don't. I guess I don't. I can't think, because I don't. I just don't look at anything like that. It's that perseverance of I look at something and I go, this may be complex, and I'll probably screw it up a few times, but I know eventually that I'm going to get there, and then I'm going to kind of put that in my pocket. You know?
Yeah. Have you ever been cooking something that's like pricey and that you fucked it up? Like maybe.
Oh yeah.
What's some examples of that? What's something you've had?
So I think my biggest screw up, I was working at the Wolfboro Inn, and we did it was New Year's Eve, which we were staying open till midnight, and that night we did 400 covers in the restaurant, which is busy on a typical night there on the weekend.
Wait, 400 covers, 400 people?
What do you 400 mean? People.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So that was busy for them. That was very busy. And on top of that, we had a wedding for 175 people down in the ballroom.
My God.
Yeah. So I mean, it was a crazy day. So when we were planning how we were gonna do this weekend, I said to the executive chef, I said, I'll take the wedding, so that you don't even have to worry about that. Just staff for the restaurant, give me one person with the wedding, and we'll, you know, we'll knock that out. But everything went great. The wedding was going fine. They ordered grilled sirloin, you know, for their wedding, and I can't remember what people paid, but it was like, I want to say it was like $80-$90 a head. It was a very expensive wedding. They spent a lot of money.
And you said what, 140 people?
175 people.
Oh my god.
Yeah. So I had somebody with me helping me out who I kind of put a little more in his hands than I really should have. We were downstairs plating, and the sirloins I was having him put in the oven so that they stayed nice and fresh. You know, once we got down to like 10 of them, I'd have him run and put another pan in to get them, you know, warm to cook to temp.
Yeah.
Well, all of a sudden, he started coming down with sirloins, and we're plating, and I'm watching all these sirloins go out. And then through the other door, I'm watching all the servers walk in with plates of sirloins in their hand coming right back in the other way.
Just and like, I'm like, it's raw.
It's raw. Yeah, exactly. He put it in the oven for like, I don't even know, maybe a minute. They were completely raw. And yeah, those people were so pissed, man. And it was on me because I should have been the one cooking them and making sure they were to temp instead of trusting somebody that really was kind of new to this whole thing, you know?
Yeah.
And, yeah, so we had to, like, discount some money off the wedding, and it was pretty embarrassing. And I think I apologized to everybody for, you know, a solid 2 weeks because I felt like complete shit about the whole thing.
So would you just throw them back in and let them cook longer and just it took longer than expected?
Yeah, but then we had to stop plating in the middle of it, you know what I mean? And, like, there was, you know, so say six tables were sitting there eating their dinner. There was probably, like, another 15 just waiting on food, you know? We had to stop dead in our tracks. And on top of that, just the embarrassment of all these steaks going out completely rare. People cut into them and we're like, no way, you know?
Yeah, like multiple. Like, I can see one person at a table, but when you get like a whole table, like, oh, this shit's still mooing.
Yeah. it was bad. Like, it was really bad. I don't know. I felt like shit, you know? I really did. It's their big day and I just ruined their dinner.
Have you tried cooking like, all different types of foods too, like any ethnic foods, or like what's the strangest thing you've tried?
Strangest thing I've tried. Well, we had to do like, you know, we had to eat sweetbreads and, you know, awful things like that. You know, innards of animals when we were in school and stuff like that. Liver, you know, raw fish, you know, raw beef, things like that.
You have pretty liver?
Oh yeah, yeah.
Any good?
Yeah, it's not bad. I mean, it's a little gamey. It's, you know, but. I don't know. Some people are really into that, you know what I mean? I would say if I went out to eat, it's probably not the thing that I would order, but, you know, I try to be open-minded about, you know.
Well, no, hold on, Dale. Elwood's freaking out. Yeah. I think my lady just came in. Elwood is, like, the number one interrupter of this podcast. That's his thing.
I thought for sure Zena was going to give us a few squeals of a whine because she's sitting out the door and wants to come in pretty bad, but...
Elwood will handle that. For all of us. So what's up now? Where are you working right now?
So I'm at Revolution Tap Room and Grill in Rochester, New Hampshire. It's sick. It's about 150 seats. It's really big on the beers and the food as well. There's 40 taps on the bar. Lots of local and craft. There's I think we have right now we have Bud Light in a bottle. I don't even think we have regular Budweiser. We have Coors Light on tap, and I think PBR at the moment. The rest is all local craft stuff. Really good. It's all scratch menu, so everything we're doing in-house, all the desserts, soups, salads, sauces, you know, whatever's on that menu, the kitchen crew's creating out back. So it's pretty cool. It's kind of like, I guess I call it like a take on modern American cuisine, or like plays on rustic food, you know?
Yeah, you were sending me that, you sent me the link to that review that you got, and I thought that was really cool, man. What was that all about? Who was that lady that did the review?
So, yeah, Rachel Forrest, I guess, came in a couple times. She does reviews for the Portsmouth Herald or Seacoast Online. She's really, really big in the culinary scene on the Seacoast. You know, Portsmouth, South Berwick, Kittery, Dover. There's a lot of talented people in the area, and she's, you know, she touches base with a lot of them and has, you know, a lot of solid contacts. But I guess she was in a couple times when we first opened, and then a little bit later on, and gave us a review on, it was in the Portsmouth Herald. She did a write-up. It was also online. She ended up giving us 5 stars overall, which was the most that you could get for everything. So that was really, really cool to have her come in and to get that kind of review. Is really, really nice.
Yeah, that must be like the gold star on the chart, like in school when you're like, you get like that little like seal of approval, which I never got, but I think it would probably be pretty awesome.
Yeah, neither did I until I became an adult. Yeah, no, it was really awesome because, I mean, you know, she knows food, like she's, you know, she knows what's going on in the area. So that was, you know, if anybody's going to review your food and give you a positive review around here, you know, that was definitely pretty awesome. And that, you know, she'd be the one that you would want to come in, definitely. So.
I mean, she could have totally turned it around and been like, yeah, it's a little raw, a little gamey. I couldn't get it down.
Yeah, never going to pay for this wedding. No.
How do you go about, because I remember you describing to me before, how do you go about picking a menu? How do you go about picking what's going to be on a menu? Like, is it all a matter of preference? Are there things you have to include? Are there staples? Can you get risky with it? Like, what's your approach?
Well, I think it depends on, first you have to know where you are. You have to understand your demographics. Like, you gotta know the area.
Like, so if you're in Las Vegas, lobster's probably not your best choice.
No, probably not.
It's not gonna be that fresh.
Right, exactly. I mean, but you can go to Las Vegas and there'll be people that do it because there's gonna be people that want it, you know?
They're assholes, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, I think understanding, you know, what your audience is, I guess, is what you're looking for. Rochester, I don't think there's anything like what we're doing in Rochester right now with the restaurant. It's kind of a mix of familiar foods with, I guess, higher-end ingredients and higher-end plays and things like, you know, different, I guess, different influences on sides and whatnot, you know, is what we're doing. I think we're just kind of mixing and matching and playing a little bit and seeing where we can go with the stuff. And so far it's been, you know, the reception's been really, really positive from people. So
is it a collective effort of like picking what's on the menu, or does it come down to one person?
It's a collective effort. Originally the menu, this menu that we have right now was written by me over the summer. I came onto this, you know, the restaurant wasn't even open when I was hired, and so I had a lot of time at home to put together this menu and put it in place. But now I've got, you know, a whole staff on board. I've got 2 sous chefs, Justin Hewitt and Derek Dinas, who do phenomenal work for me. Guys are awesome, and they have impacted what's going to happen with the menu in the future, and they will have input as well as far as, you know, what we're going to do on it. And, you know, they've got ideas of their own. So it's, you know, I love hearing from those guys as far as what they want to do. I let them do specials every day. So we see new things all the time of what they're putting together and, you know, things like that. And some of those things, you know, are going to go on, you know, the menu when it changes again. So
how often do you have to change the menu?
I think we're going to do a little edit soon. I don't think anything crazy, but come springtime we're going to see a pretty significant overhaul, just because a lot of the things on there right now are so geared towards winter and, you know, availability on, you know, produce and things like that, and they're a lot more heavier dishes.
Yeah.
So come spring we'll lighten it up, and, you know, we've got a couple of local farms that we're going to work with, so a lot of things come in the spring, you know, radishes, peas, beans, things like that will, you know, bring on and, you know, get more probably seafood and lighter things on there. So
do you have anything that you cook that you get the most praise for? Like people, like maybe you cook that you've cooked and people are like requesting it or hyped for it or.
Yeah, we do a Brussels sprout dish at the restaurant. That's probably like one of the most popular items. And it's just roasted Brussels sprouts. So instead of blanching them in water, we hard roast them in the oven. So they get this really deep flavor on them. And then we make a bacon marmalade. So it's almost like a bacon jam. So there's like caramelized onions and coffee and garlic and brown sugar. And we just roast these Brussels sprouts. We toss them in this bacon marm. And, I mean, sell them like that as a small plate, man. And people love them. I mean, that's probably, you know, one of the dishes that we get the most response on. And it's so simple, yet it's just got so much going on, you know?
Damn, when we come to film AIM life, we might have to get some of the Brussels sprouts then, because that sounds delicious.
Yeah, definitely. Another one is we do a gnocchi mac and cheese, so it's a play on the mac and cheese. Well,
gnocchi?
And then we're...
I'm sorry to cut you off, but gnocchi is what?
So we make gnocchi is a potato pasta. So we make gnocchi in-house, and then we do a smoked cheddar cheese sauce. And then we just saute some of that gnocchi, get some nice brown going on with some andouille sausage, a little bit of braised kale, that smoked cheddar sauce, and then we top it with a little bit of parsley pesto. But, I mean, super heavy dish, you know, but lots of really good flavors going on, and, you know, it's pretty cool and it's fun to do, so.
Yeah, that sounds amazing, man.
It's things like that, you know.
Yeah, that sounds amazing, absolutely. What about desserts? Do you get into desserts at all?
Yeah, we do all of our own desserts. So we do, right now we're doing a lemon cheesecake with a lemon curd, candied lemon wheels. It's got a biscotti crust. We do a chocolate and toasted hazelnut or toasted almond bread pudding. We also do we're doing a dulce de leche creme brulee with ginger snap cookies. I'm trying to think what else we got going on. We got a gingerbread with a fig compote and whipped cream. And what's the last one? We're doing salted caramel brownies with vanilla bean ice cream and
ooh,
yeah.
I want that right now. That sounds delicious.
Yeah, that I've just been running that for like the past 2 weeks, man. That I think that's like the only dessert that we've sold. People are loving it. So
yeah, that sounds really good.
It's worked out well.
To jump back a little bit here, what is the schooling like? I'm trying to. Do they just give you basic dishes and make sure you can learn how to cook? And like how far does schooling take it? And how much is it on your own? You know, like how far does school take you? And then how far do you take it past that? Like, you know what I mean? Like, does a school make a chef? Yeah. Or, you know what I mean?
No, school doesn't make a chef. School is a really good foundation to understand, God, I guess what you're getting into, the complexities of it. The chefs in school, the chef instructors always told you how many different hats you were going to be wearing, like dealing with the psychology of the employees and the long hours and the variables. And they gave you a good preparation for that. And they showed you a solid foundation of food and technique as well. So knife skills, you know, sanitation, all the really, really important things to understand was really awesome for that. You know, how to saute, how to poach, how to braise, how to do all of these different things. School was very military-like. It was, you show up, you know, class started at 6:30. If you were there at 6:31, you stood in the hallway until they were done with lecture. They wouldn't let you in the room. You were in a clean uniform every single day, no stains. You had to shave that morning. If you didn't shave, you know, that morning, you had a little bit of stubble because you shaved the night before, they'd give you a razor, man, no shaving cream, send you to the bathroom. You come back in with, like, bloody cuts all over your face, you know.
You sound like this happened to you.
No, I got pretty lucky. I don't know if the chef instructors liked me or not, but, you know, they'd come up to me and be like, hey, take care of that tomorrow, you know. But I saw a couple people, you know, come in with, you know, they leave the room, come back in 5 minutes later, little pieces of toilet paper stuck to their face, you know.
They had a raw dog in the bathroom.
Oh, God, I couldn't even imagine. So, but yeah, it was really good. It was really good like that. I mean, you know, I taught you rules and you know, and you had to follow them, and it was strict, and you know, some of it you take with you and some of it you don't, but it was good. I probably needed that at that time in my life to kind of, you know, if this is what you're going to do, then you got to take it seriously. And you know, it's professionalism, which, you know, is a really good thing to see. So
that's what I was going to ask next. I was going to ask if you feel like in the job market, like that, in the time that you were looking for jobs, do you feel like that education, that diploma, did that give you an edge? Do you feel?
I think it helps, but I think references in knowing people and building good relationships with people is probably the most important thing that you can do. I mean, not only do you have to be highly skilled, but if you're highly skilled and nobody likes you and nobody can vouch for you, it's going to be really difficult to get a job.
Yeah.
You know, anywhere, really. For me, there's no egos. There's, you know, it's just being humble, enjoying what you do and enjoying the people that you work with and trying to get everybody else to go along and to get better at their you know, jobs, career, whatever it may be, is a super, super important aspect. So, yeah, I mean, it's a small world, you know, I'm sure it's the same thing in the skateboarding biz. Everybody knows each other. So it's, you know, even through, you know, disagreements and differences. I mean, you got to understand that everybody's trying to do a job, you know?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And experience plays a lot in anything you do. I just kind
of... It does.
Yeah, I was wondering how much, like, I feel like, how much experience plays into getting a job, you know? I feel like, I guess what I'm wondering is because I can see a kid, like, being a dishwasher and going, I want to be a chef one day, but maybe they can't afford schooling or they've never been there. Like, how unlikely or likely is it to work your way up to that head chef position at a place, you know?
I think anybody has a fair shake at it.
Yeah.
You can not go to school and you can study at home and you can ask questions and you can learn a ton. You know what I mean? I honestly feel like you can do it either way. I decided to go to culinary school. Well, I guess I didn't really decide to go to culinary school on my own. I had a little bit of help with that, but you know, we'll get into that in a minute. But I think anybody has a chance of doing it. It's just that drive and that, you know, the passion to be able to want to do it and to understand it. So, but I think anybody, you know, anybody can definitely work their way up the ladder. I've seen it before. I worked for people, you know, that didn't go to school. So.
That's cool, man. What were you saying about you had some push with schooling? You didn't decide.
All right, so for me to go to school, what happened was I was at that kind of, you know, undecided, you know, point in life. I wasn't really quite sure, you know, what was going on. And then, you know, I found out, you know, Nikki was pregnant with Savannah. And I was still skateboarding, and I ended up going to Boston with some friends.
Yeah.
And we went to MIT, and we were skating there. I think we were there for maybe like 3 minutes, and I took off down the street. And I went to Back Smith, one of the ledges at MIT there, and I wasn't even looking, and all of a sudden, like, there's a cop walking over towards me, and he stops me and takes my ID and everything, and, you know, he tells me I'm going to get something in the mail or whatever.
Fucking
so, yeah, so it was like 2 weeks later, my mother calls me, and she's like, you got a summons in the mail from MIT, and she was like, they're charging you with a felony for skateboarding. And I was like, you gotta be kidding me. Felony for skateboarding.
You fucking
apparently
delinquent?
They sent somebody. What's that?
You fucking delinquent?
Yeah. Well, apparently they sent somebody to do an estimate at MIT, and they estimated all the damage at MIT that had been done forever. And they,
and for fucking 20, 30 years.
I know, it was older than I was.
Yeah.
But, so they came up with this estimate of $18,000 worth of damage. It was like $18,500. Yeah. I was there for 3 minutes. And so they were charging me with a felony. It was a malicious destruction of property was the charge. And so I had to go to court. And I you know, my stepmother is a lawyer. She works for the state. But so I called her, and I was freaking out because I didn't know what to do. Like,
$18,000? You know? Fuck me.
$18,000. Yeah. So the first time I went to court, I didn't have a lawyer. And Nikki and I went. She's pregnant with Savannah. And the judge, you know, the judge gives us a continuance so I can get a lawyer. And he goes – he says to me, he goes, I just have to warn you, you could do up to 10 years for this. And I'm like, 10 years? And then he goes over, like, the things that, you know, a felon can't do. There was, I can't even remember what they are, but there was, like, I couldn't go hunting. I couldn't get a boating license. I couldn't register to vote. There was, like, a ton of different things I couldn't do.
You're not allowed to juggle.
Not allowed to juggle, which sucks because I am huge into juggling. But, no, but, you know, it was crazy. And so my stepmother reached out to some people she knew, and she found this guy in Boston that had gotten some bikers out of trouble for the same thing. And I walked into his office the first time I met him. He was wearing flip flops, and there was an Easy E plaque up on his wall.
Is this a lawyer? Is it a lawyer or just a guy?
No, it was a lawyer, man. He came from California, and he was Easy E's lawyer out in California.
Tight.
Yeah, so he's got this like gold record hanging up on his wall, you know, and I'm like, oh, this is the guy that's going to get me out of this.
He's like, you walk in, he's like, sit down, motherfucker, I got to talk to you about your shit, yo.
Yeah, he was pretty relaxed.
No joke.
Yeah, but no, he went over everything with me, and, you know, he didn't tell me, like, you know, you're going to be all right, but in some kind of way he did, you know?
Yeah.
And so I had to go to court, like, 3 times, and I forgot my dad lent me the money for the lawyer. And he was like, which wasn't cheap at all.
I mean,
it was like
Easy E's lawyer has got to be charged quite a bit.
Yeah, it was not cheap at all. And so his deal was, you know, I'm gonna pay for the lawyer, but your way of paying me back is you're gonna go to school. You're gonna get a degree. So anyways, that's how where the whole college camp thing came from. But the lawyer, I ended up going to court. Like, the first time I went with the lawyer, they offered to drop the charge to, like, a misdemeanor. And he was like, don't do it. You know, we'll get you out of it. So I think I had to go, like, it was like the fourth or fifth time we went. I was sitting down in the courtroom. And it was like right away, the prosecutor's like, Dale Raymond. I'm like, yep. And she's like, case has been dismissed. I'm like, what? Just like that? So we go out into the lobby, and the lawyer gives me this piece of paper, and he's like, here, this is what I found. He went on MIT's website, and I'll never forget this. There was a web page on MIT's website, and on that web page it was promoting skateboarding. It said skateboarding is the center of youth culture. Exactly. So he gives this piece of paper to MIT, who's pushing charges against me, trying to charge me with a felony for skateboarding, and MIT can't do anything, so they drop the charges immediately.
Yeah, they're
so I walked. What's that?
Yeah, MIT would be a hypocrite.
Yeah, so I walk out of there with a clean slate, but I had to go, you know what I mean? I had to go through all this stuff and, like, be threatened with all these things that I possibly couldn't do, or even jail time.
Damn, dude. Do you ever
you know what I mean? Like,
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Say that again?
Do you ever sit back and just laugh and think about, like, how Eazy-E got you to be a cook? In some strange way, Eazy-E's responsible for you being a chef? I mean, technically,
I guess, we could kind of look at it that way. Usually when I think of Eazy-E, I don't think about him helping me be a cook, but, you know, I guess.
I mean, he got you cooking school. His legal advice got you off this cooking school. Let's not gloss over that.
Yeah, well, I guess MIT kind of gave me an education in a way, too, you know?
Illegal. You got your legal degree, your law degree through MIT.
Yeah, so. I was scared to skateboard for a long time after that. It took me a long time.
Well, scared to skateboard on campuses, probably?
No, just scared in general. I mean, honestly, for a police officer, a cop, to have that much power, to be able to – he would have destroyed my life.
Yeah.
To be able to destroy my life. All because he was pissed off at skateboarders because they were skateboarding. That's not okay for somebody to wield that much power, you know?
That's ridiculous, yeah. That would have fucked you up.
And if it's my word against his in any court of law, he's always going to win, you know?
Yeah. I almost got into a fist fight with an MIT cop before. I was skating, and we were all skating. There was like five of us skating, and this lady police officer, MIT campus cop, came up to me, to all five of us, and we were like on these stairs, like walking down these stairs, and she was like, stop. So we're like stopping, and she's like asking us for our IDs and stuff.
Yeah.
And I was standing there, and then I kind of like lost my balance because I was just kind of sore and tired, and I'm standing on a stair, and I lost my balance, and I kind of stepped down just to catch myself. Yeah. And she thought I was, like, gonna run, so she just, like, grabbed me. And when she grabbed me, I just kind of, like, instinctively, like, knocked her hand off me, you know? Because she grabbed me by my shirt, and I was just like, ah! Like, not even thinking about it. And then she got on a radio, and she started freaking out, being like, oh, the skateboarder, da da da. So then her, like, partner, campus cop, fucking McDewey, or whatever his name was, comes charging through, like, a four-way stop in his car, jacks on his brakes like a movie, like skids to a stop in the middle of a four-way stop, comes running up to me. He didn't even try talking to me or anything. He just tried to fight me. So, like, she, like, grabbed him because he was charging at me like a mad dog, and I kind of, like, didn't know what to do, so I just kind of went at him, and then my friends grabbed me, and they were just, like, yelling and trying to get at – he had a gun, too, but he wasn't going for it.
Christ.
And I was, like, just – kind of like going at him because I thought he was going to hurt me, so I was like, I got to defend myself, and it just ended up us, they just had to separate us basically, so we didn't even get in trouble. They just like dragged me off, and she dragged him off, and it was like, that was it.
So you almost assaulted a police officer. I did a backside Smith grind, and I get charged with a felony?
Yeah, nothing happened to me. Eazy-E didn't come into my life at all.
Damn.
I got an important question, Dale.
Yeah.
Do you watch any cooking shows?
I don't have cable. Well, actually, all right, let me take that back. So I got Netflix, and on Netflix there's a series called In the Mind of a Chef.
Yeah, I watch it all the time. One of my favorite shows, dude.
Yeah, which is pretty awesome.
By Anthony Bourdain?
Yeah. So like David Chang and Sean Brock. Like, I just got Sean Brock's book, Heritage. My wife bought it for me, which is pretty sick, you know. Lots of low country cooking down south. Pretty awesome.
Hell yeah.
So I do. I don't have cable, so I don't watch Food Network or like Rachel Ray or, you know, any 30-minute meal stuff like that. I'm not really digging that. So
no, but that show that's why I was basically baiting you right there, and it's crazy that you actually watch that one, because that's the one that I watch and I like it. It's not like a normal cooking show. It's more like down to earth, but like really informative and cool, and like it's about his career and about what he does and just like the way it should be done.
And it's super in depth about what they do. You know what I mean? Like. And the traveling and seeing, like, the different things, you know, like Sean Brock is big into, you know, the heirloom seeds and fruits and vegetables and things like that. Like, and that defines somebody by what they're doing, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
when you think of him, that's kind of what you associate him with. And he's right. He talks about those flavors and where they're coming from and how clean and natural they are, you know, which is awesome. So,
I really,
yeah, definitely.
I really enjoyed, like, all the ramen too, like all the ramen cooking. He had like episode, he's like going through all the ramen. I love ramen, like not. I mean, I love like ghetto ramen, but I like real Japanese ramen too. It's so damn good, man.
Yeah, yeah. Asian cuisine is so awesome. It really is. Like it's completely different. Like in school, you're trained for French cuisine, which is really weak flavors, and you're bringing them down and purifying them and making them strong by reducing you're losing it as you go.
Yeah.
But Asian cuisine is such strong flavors. It's like complete opposite. You're stretching them out and spreading them because they're so intense, you know?
Yeah. That's right, man. So I kind of wanted to end the show on a question. Not even a question, just I just wanted to kind of relive something with you for a second. I just want to relive behind Walmart.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Tell the story.
We kind of praised
you and talked about your cooking and your accomplishments. Kind of want to bring you down a notch, bring you back to.
I kind of figured something like this was gonna come, you know.
So what happened? So, I wasn't there.
You were in New Hampshire at the time, but we were skating. So my excuse is we were skating a loading dock out back at Walmart all day, and I think I spent like 3 weeks trying to like fakie frontside flip off this loading dock. And I think it was one of those days where I spent a couple hours trying to do this, and my legs were pretty tired at the end of it. But for some reason, I decided I was going to set up a bread crate with an old skateboard on top of it and ollie it flat ground. And you know those old boards, the tails get super razor sharp because they're all worn down and, you know, they're all crusty. Well, my legs weren't really feeling the ollie part, and my board, when I went to do it, my board hit the crate. And the one on top landed straight up and gave me a nice stab right between the legs. And I gave the old hand check, came up a little bloody, so had to go to the ER and get I think it was like 4 stitches, something like that. But I remember you guys coming back. We were in Wareham. We were living in that trailer, and you and Neil came back, and I was sitting there. I think I was sitting there like just spread eagle. You guys were like, what's up with you? I tore my shit open, man. You guys didn't believe me. I had to show you guys to get you to believe me.
You were the human popsicle. You became a popsicle that day.
Yeah. I walked bow-legged for like a week, man. I had one stitch poking me in the thigh all week.
Where were these stitches? I don't remember. In the sack or the scrub? Oh,
they're sack.
Yeah, that's. I guess you're lucky in that sense. Were you worried that your fucking testy would fall out of that thing? On your B-side?
I saw it, man. Sketchy. Like, I saw inside. There was a, you know, I think when I looked is when it shrunk a little bit was when I realized what was going on. But my first look, man, it was a pretty good laceration, and that's when I panicked and had somebody call 911, because it was weird, because like I was in the hospital and a doctor operating on you right there is a little kind of, it's kind of a funky thing. But you know, as he's down there, he's talking to me, he's like telling me war stories about, you know, people fracturing their testicles, and like he's telling me about some guy getting shot in his leg, and when it hit his leg, like he like, I don't know, his sack like shrunk, so it like clipped the bottom of him, you know.
Oh my God. So,
yeah, so he was like, you're really lucky, you know. But yeah, that was quite the experience that I hope to never have again. So.
I mean, I've had to go to the doctors and show my balls multiple times because of poison ivy. You remember how bad I got that?
I told somebody about that the other day. I was like, yeah, my buddy Anthony, he decided to wipe himself in the woods when he was a young lad, and you know, came out a little swollen a couple days later.
Dude, it's so bad.
I think that's something about your mother telling me about it. I'm like, Lisa, leave him alone.
Dude, as a young kid, I had to show my mom my balls, and I had to show my mom my whole junk, and I had to show a doctor my whole shit, just like, because I didn't know what was going on, you know, and
right.
Shit looks like a fucking balloon knot down there, looking all funky and strange, you know? And
I think that was when I first met you. I think you had just gotten over it, and your mother was telling me about it.
I know, my mom used to like to do stuff like that. There was like one time, me and, you know, Jeff Talsmanic.
Yeah.
One time me and Jeff were we were just like young little kids, and like the washing machine or the dryer was like was a little off balance. So when it would go, it would rattle and go like real loud. And me and Jeff, I looked at Jeff, I was like, check this. I like leaned against the dryer and put my crotch against it. I was like, Jeff, you gotta try this. It feels good, dude. So he does it, dude. And my mom walks in right when we're both like pressing up against this drying machine. And she's like, what are you, her exact words, dude, what are you two faggots doing? I'm just like, oh God, I don't know. Being weird little kids, like weird little kids, dry humping dryers and shit.
Yeah, but your mom was all crazy too. She would go and tell everybody about it.
Oh, dude, my mom tells everyone about that stuff. She, every time Jeff would come over too, he had like the dreadlocks, and she always wanted him to cut it, and she'd grab him, and her favorite word was faggot. She'd grab the dreads, and she'd pull his hair as hard as possible. Like, when are you going to cut these, faggot? And he'd be like, Lisa, stop pulling my hair. Every time, dude. So brutal. So brutal.
Oh, Jesus.
Sorry to get a little dark farm right there on you. So,
no worries.
She wasn't being mean or malicious. It was just how she interacted with us.
Yeah, no, I knew. Every time I went over there, man, it was hilarious. She'd tell me some new story about you doing something, so.
Yeah.
Something really embarrassing that you probably never wanted anybody to know, but she'd fill you in right when you walked in the door.
Yeah. I mean, the trailer that you mentioned earlier in the episode, we were living there because I used to live there with my mom and my sister and stuff, and then I don't remember what happened, but basically they couldn't take that spot, so we just took it over, remember?
Yeah.
It's just like a bunch of kids that didn't know what the fuck we were doing, and we just took this trailer over and started making payments. Well, some of us for a while. Man, the gnarliest thing.
I told you before, remember, I had to become an adult at like 24. This trailer was far before that.
Yeah, we were so young, dude. We were just getting wasted, and our homie Tiki would bring over like those balls. The beer balls, yeah, and he was like way older than us, but he would just buy us whatever we wanted, and we'd just get drunk, punch holes in the trailer, and
yeah, he was the only one with a full time job too.
Yeah, and well, I was working. I was washing dishes at that time at
You're still going to high school too.
Yeah. I remember skating home from washing dishes. I'd be covered in seafood from washing dishes, and then you guys would meet me at Walmart, and I'd skate like 2 miles to work, be covered in seafood, and then skate a mile to Walmart, skate with you guys while I'm covered in fucking disgusting seafood, drenched clothes. We'd skate Walmart mani pad for like hours, and then we'd skate back another mile.
Uphill.
And
I didn't mind skating to Walmart. Skating home from Walmart sucked though.
Yeah, and that was Garden Homes North, right? That trailer park.
Yeah.
And I just remember being so sweaty and so covered in disgusting like seafood water. It was so nasty. Fuck.
Yeah. No, I remember I worked third shift at that gas station on 24 there, man. It was, like, super sketchy. I hated it. And then I was all screwed up because I worked third shift, so I'd be up all night until, like, 7, 8 in the morning just sitting in my room doing nothing. Everybody else is sleeping, you know?
Yeah, that was, like, the closest to a crack house without actually any crack involved. You know?
Yeah, I know.
Like, it was just, like, what's that with the boys when they end up in the wild and they just all, like, hunt each other? What is that?
Oh, God, yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, it was like that island where a bunch of boys that aren't men yet just get together and they're in charge. And that's kind of what we were in charge, but no one fucking knew what to do, and we were just fuck shit up.
Yeah, nobody had any
idea. I remember Cats. I remember
all fighting, bicker, and bitch. Remember Dave, your sister's boyfriend, lived there too? He was like complete outcast.
Remember? He was like be out fixing his car and like his whitey tighties covered in oil at like 6 in the morning, and he's got like gelled hair, but he's in whitey tighties covered in oil. I'm like, what the hell are you doing? We got like a professional model out, in broad daylight. Like,
remember we'd all be watching skate videos 24/7, and then he comes in one day all pissed off with like a video on fishing. We're like, Dave, the fuck is this, man? Like, fishing. It was like some classical music playing in the background, you know.
I remember that a cat had some kittens in the closet, and none of us knew how to take care of them, and they all got fleas, and one by one they kept dying. It was like a whole litter of kittens that just died because none of us knew how to get rid of fleas. And like, I remember running like a couple trailers down and being like to the girls that were there, being like, "These cats are dying. I don't know what to do. They just have fleas, and we don't know what the fuck we're doing." And that was like pretty awful.
Was that the same girls you gave my dog away to when I was at work one day?
Did I give your dog away? This is like
you don't remember. Come on, I had a dog, and you were all pissed off.
What kind of dog?
I probably didn't take care of the dog the way that it should have been taken care of. But
what kind of dog? I'm trying to remember.
It was I think it was like a boxer lab mix or something like that. No, it was some mutt. But I left. I went to work one day, and I came home, and the dog was gone. you gave it to your girlfriend.
Really?
Yeah, no consulting, no nothing. Just gave the dog away.
Dude, I don't remember this at all. I don't remember you having a dog.
Yeah, it is.
That's how wild it was. I apologize now. I hope we can stay friends.
Yeah, it's cool, man. Well, you know, I'm one of these days I'll let go of it. Same as the newspaper thing, but you know.
Wait, what newspaper thing? What are you talking about?
With your kickflip, man.
Oh well, yeah. I mean,
see, I still haven't forgotten.
That happens. Hey, it all worked.
That did happen.
It all worked out for the best. Apparently, I made the right choice of giving the dog away. Everything's good.
Yes, true. This is true. I got another dog if you want to give one away. I'm ready.
I just show up at your house. Hey, Dale, I got to use your bathroom. Yeah, you're like, "Where's Shetler?" He's like, "He said he had to use the bathroom." And next thing you're looking for your dog, I'm gone.
I'll leave for work. There'll be no more dogs.
Well, are you ready for the storm, though?
I think we're as ready as we're going to be, yeah. So
what do you got? Do you got a shovel or you got like a plow or how are you going to do this?
Well, I have a snowblower, but it's not working. So, I mean, it's kind of just sitting up back doing its thing. So it looks like I'm going to be shoveling. I did get some sweet boots for Christmas, though, so I'm going to put those to use.
There you go. I'll be shoveling. Yeah. I'll be shoveling, too. I don't have nothing but a shovel. But sometimes our neighbor comes over and they got the snowblower and they'll help us out. But I think if we get as much snow as they're saying, he might be too busy with his own yard.
Yeah, it's going to be pretty bad. So, yeah, I'll be shoveling. I mean, my driveway is pretty small, so it's not really a big deal. Plus, I probably need the exercise as well, so.
We'll get it in, Dale. Well, dude, I'm hyped we got to do this, man. I'm stoked. It's kind of cool. I've never really had a chef on the show before.
Yeah, man, definitely. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it, man.
No, it's cool, man. I wanted to kind of let my listeners kind of hear about like what it's about, you know, like how you go about it, and you kind of went about it like you went about it from the ground up position, you know. You started washing dishes and worked your way all your way up, even with schooling and whatnot. So I think it's pretty rad, man. And yeah, thanks again, man. And is there any if anyone wants to hit you up, got any questions or anything you want to promote or you want us to promote, what do you got on social media? I know you got an Instagram.
Yeah, I got an Instagram. It's at Brazen Cows.
Brazen Cows, right?
Yeah, and then also got a Facebook, so.
Is that Dale Raymond?
Yeah, it's just Dale Raymond.
Awesome, man. Well, thanks for coming on, homie.
All right, man.
All right, peace.
Whatever you do, you have one thing that's unique. You have the ability to make art. When things get tough, this is what you should do.
Microphone check, 1, 2, 1, 2. Microphone check, 1, 2, 1, 2. I hope they get it, I'm sick of explaining history. I'm rolling with a circle of winners, we claiming victories. Yeah, come on. This about to be the realest shit you ever heard.
In a transitional world right now.
Yeah, it's just basically going for it, you know. And sometimes, you know, you think about getting hurt or slamming, but, you know, it happens. It's skateboarding. You know, it happens every day.
Yep. People are worried about skateboarding and the state of the industry. Yeah. The truth is, we are the industry. Yeah. Skateboarders are the industry.
Experience, I guess, just because there's, like, I've never seen, like, that many skaters in one place. Just, like, it's like we take over the streets.